And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, welcome to One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health on Buffalo Bills Radio. I'm Josh Reed alongside Thad Brown. At some point, he's going to be co-hosting this show with me. We are filling in for Steve Tasker and Chris Brown as they try to squeeze in a little bit of vacation. As we know, this is kind of the slow part, the kind of build-up to Bills training camp, which gets underway 1 week from Sunday, and that's where we're going to head to St. John Fisher. As you probably have heard by now, no tickets left for Bills training camp practices. There are still tickets that are going to be remaining for the practice that happens at Highmark Stadium. Of course, all the Bills fans are looking forward to getting out, watching this team. The anticipation is through the roof for this season. And keep in mind, it's been a couple of years since we've had training camp, live and in person, and the fans out there. So a lot of fans really looking forward to not only seeing Josh Allen back out on the field, but seeing what Gabe Davis looks like in that number two role. Getting a chance to see the new future Hall of Famer, defensive end, elite pass rusher, Von Miller. So a lot of storylines going into Bills training camp. Looking forward to that, of course. Once again, that is 1 week from Sunday. Now, the rookies actually report next week, but we kind of, the media side of things,
we
really gear up starting on Sunday, 1 week from Sunday. And there he is, Thad Brown, as promised. Thad Brown joining us, co-hosting the show today. Thad, we're just talking a little bit about the return to Rochester training camp. Obviously, a lot of anticipation in particular this year, so much so that no tickets left. I mean, the downside is you're going to have a lot of fans disappointed, not getting a chance to go see their team a couple of weeks, leading up into the season, the preseason. But the upside is it means they're really good. The interest is there. For two decades, you could just walk right up. Go ahead. Go see practice. Now it's a little tougher to get that ticket.
Yeah, it's a little different setup than how it was in the past with, like you said, people being able to just essentially, roll up on practice and watch. And, I know that frustrated some people yesterday trying to get those tickets. From what I was told, there's only about 2,000 tickets being made available to each of these practices. You do the math times 11 open practices. That's not even enough to fill up a third of Highmark Stadium for a home game. So you can understand, why, some issues happen. But like you said, it is encouraging to see how much of a demand there is for these Bills practices again. And I can tell you from being in Rochester, when the Bills opened their new home practice facility and there's all that talk about, well, maybe Rochester isn't part of, what they should be doing in training camp anymore. A lot of other teams were pulling back from their, trip away from home and kind of keeping camp in their home base. In Rochester, although everyone here wanted to see camp remain in Rochester and we're proud of the fact that the Bills, came here for 3-4 weeks a year, they're Bills fans too. And if Sean McDermott says that, well, this is the best way we can win a Super Bowl, then, by gosh, all of Rochester's on board for that too, even if it meant, not coming here. But now that the Bills have, re-upped their commitment to being here and Sean McDermott for the umpteenth time has talked about how much he enjoys, being in Rochester and the bonding part of it. It's a big feather in the cap here for the people who live in this town that the Bills, find it important enough for, like you said, a team that, is going to have Super Bowl aspirations and very legit ones, that they think it's a good thing to come to our town and to be here for a few weeks and to spend time at Pittsford and to have garbage plates maybe and to play some golf here and stuff like that. So, it's a huge deal for Rochester. I know everyone I've talked to is completely fired up. Camp is back. I'm sure that speaks to a lot of what happened yesterday with the demand for tickets. So, can't wait for it to get going next Sunday. And for us here, and I know I speak for all of Rochester, very, very proud that, if this is going to be a Super Bowl run, and it might be, that's going to begin right here.
Yeah, Thad, I'm not going to pull any punches. I'm not going to lie, because if I said that I was 1,000% on board with Rochester, you'd be looking back in this camera going, he's such a liar. A couple of years ago, I said, I'm ready to not come up and sleep in these dorm rooms and this and that, but I don't know if – I think a little bit of is you feel like a little return to normalcy, right? I am looking forward to being up there at Rochester. I really am. That is 100% truthful, and I think it's one of those deals – I think it's one of those deals where you have something taken away from you, and then all of a sudden you get it back and you go, all right, yeah, I missed you. I did. I missed you a lot. So I really do. I think it's going to be nice to be back up in Rochester. You know how it is. You stay overnight. Yeah, sure, the dorm rooms are a little cramped. I know you get to go home. But for those of us that do stay overnight, it's a little cramped. But, man, as you mentioned, the garbage plates – the golf, the camaraderie even. I know they talk about, you know, you hear Sean talk about the players and hanging out, but we do too. The media does that as well. We get a chance to kind of go out and hang out and kind of be around each other for, you know, a couple of weeks. So definitely looking forward to it. A little bit of a change, right? St. John Fisher University now. So
yeah, that's as of January 1st.
Yeah. So we got to keep that in mind when we're tagging out of all of our live shots this year. Changed up a little bit. What else? Are there any other changes that you've heard about that are going to be at least, you know, around the facility and stuff like that? And what are you kind of hearing?
Well, first of all, I respect your honesty about the sleeping in dorms part. And as someone who has spent literally 1,000 hours of my life on the thruway between Rochester and Buffalo, I respect the frustration with you guys having to come back down here for a little while. But in terms of the camp, for the most part, from what I understand, it's going to be largely the same. Now, obviously, we talked about the ticket and the limited attendance thing first. Number two, the other, I think, major change fans will notice is that the giant merchandise tent will no longer be there. The Bills are now going to bring in the trailers, that the kind of the mobile merchandise areas that you see. If you've been to Highmark Stadium for a game, you've seen them around the stadium a little bit. That will be the merchandise purchase area when it comes to camp. And as a result, the entrance to camp will be a little different. If people remember coming to Fisher, you know, the buses will drop off kind of between a dorm and behind the Grounding Stadium stands. And you go down the steps, and you kind of walk in. This year, you're not going to use the steps. There's a little parking lot, a little bit to the, I think it's the west of where fans used to enter. They will now enter through there. Generally, the courtyard is still the same. You know, the area where, you know, fans will see vendors and can buy refreshments and, you know, we'll see the different, you know, activities you might be able to do. That's all in generally the same area. And for the most part, you know, I think once we get going, you know, in a week and a half here or so, it's going to feel like camp never left. You know, it's going to be largely the same. You know, I think practices generally are going to be the same format and everything is going to feel, you know, like you said, return to normalcy. It's going to feel like we went back in time 3 years from what I understand, not much different at all. And it should be, you know, the same good time people are expecting.
Yeah, you know, I think even small little nuggets of that return to normalcy, whether it's training camp, little things here and there, you know, I think we all kind of embrace that right now. You know, for those fans that were able to get tickets and are going to be there, you know, watching these practices, that there's not a lot of competition on this roster for starting jobs. There's just not. That's the way Brandon Bean has built this roster. There's a lot of top-end talent and a lot of depth, but it's not a lot of starting spots available. You know, looking at some of the position groups, I want to start with defensive line a little bit because there are a lot of bodies on that defensive line and some depth there. Somebody's going to get squeezed at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think, you know, I wonder if all three of the young guys stay. I know, I think both of the second-year players, Boogie Basham and Greg Rousseau, are locks to make the roster. I could see A.J. Epenesa maybe being the guy on the outside end. I think Shaq Lawson is another candidate there. You know, I'm not sure, though. You know, I'm not sure there's a guarantee that the main nine guys you might think of, so those three defensive ends plus – or the three young guys plus Shaq plus Von Miller on the edge. And then inside you got Jordan Phillips. Let's see.
Settle.
I remember my Jones. Depth chart now. Settle, Daquan, and Ed Oliver. I think that might be the nine guys, you know, and I think everyone else is going to have to, you know, make a serious effort to unseat one of those nine. And I think of the group, I think Shaq Lawson and AJ Epenesa would be the most likely to potentially get picked off. But, you know, I'm not sure if there's much of a discussion there. Now, you know, they don't keep nine defensive linemen every year. This is a team that generally only has eight active on game day. So it's not out of the realm. And I think certainly, as you pointed out, we're going to have a hard time finding position battles to discuss. This is definitely on the short list of position battles for this particular Bills camp. But I would sit here and say right now that I feel pretty comfortable that the nine guys we just named are going to be the nine on the active roster when we get to the first week of September.
If you're watching on TV right now, you see Von Miller, some video of the new number 40, the Bills' elite pass rusher. Of course, fans are going to be really excited to get a chance to see him at training camp and, of course, throughout the season. What's another guy? You know, who's another player on that defensive side of the ball that you're really kind of going, I want to see what he does when the pads go on?
Oh, Kaiir Elam,
yeah,
of course.
I agree.
The first round pick, I'm dying. And you know me, I'm a big Dane Jackson fan.
Yeah.
We've had this conversation a little bit that let's assume, just for the sake of this discussion, that Trey White will be ready for the start of training camp and will be good to go week one. I think that might be optimistic, but just to discuss right now, let's say that's the case. Well, then there's a little bit of a position battle, that second corner, between the first round pick and the guy who ended last year as the starter and who I think has proven he can be a competent starter on this team. Now, at the end of the day, you know, it's Kaiir Elam's job to lose, and Dane Jackson's going to have to, you know, maybe outplay him by a lot when it comes to training camp. But regardless, you know, seeing the pads come on, seeing Elam integrate into this defense, and, you know, seeing a guy that's got some size in the defensive secondary, how he might stack up with, you know, Stephon Diggs and Gabriel Davis and the very good receivers the Bills have will be, you know, one of the big things I'm definitely watching in camp. There's a lot of reason to be optimistic about him, but there's a lot of reason to also expect he's not going to be ready to go right away. You know, this is a guy who came out of college as he's high with athleticism and, you know, the physical things he can do, but a little lower on technique, and I think needs to be trained up a little bit. So how fast that learning curve ascends and how quickly he takes to things when the pads, like you say, do come on, are probably top four or five things that I want to watch for in this camp.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of, and you kind of touched on it there, that's the beauty of that cornerback, wide receiver positions at training camp. You do get a really good feel. It's not like the guys in the trenches. They try to protect those guys a little bit. Mm-hmm. They don't want them bashing into each other play over play, whereas that wide receiver cornerback matchup, you can do pretty much everything when it comes to matching up man to man and working on technique and stuff like that. So, you know, you mentioned that Kaiir Elam at some point is going to line up across from Stephon Diggs, and everybody's immediately going to go, what's going on now?
Yeah.
Everybody's going to grab their pads. People are going to grab their phones. Everybody's going to be
watching. Cameras on their shoulder. Yeah.
It's good.
You know how that works, man. For us in television, you know, a little peek behind the curtain here, you know, we don't get to cover all of camp, or at least show all of camp, but we do get to show those wide receiver cornerback one-on-one battles, and those things get really intense. So, that's priority viewing for everybody's going to be at camp this year.
All right, let's kind of, since we're talking a little bit of the wide receiver cornerback things, Gabe Davis, you know, all eyes on him. I mean, you know, we talked about Kaiir Elam, you know, one of the youngsters, Von Miller, people are going to be. Here's Gabe Davis, you know, ended the season with just about as good of a performance as you could possibly put on tape. But I tell you what, I actually had an old basketball coach, old high school basketball coach who got promoted, one of my first jobs. He got promoted from assistant coach to head coach at a very, very successful program. And in his interview of getting promoted, he said, there's a big difference between the seat here and the seat right here. And now, and he says, it's only like 12 inches, but he goes, it's a big step. And here's Gabe Davis, right? A guy who was able to fly under the radar for the most part. You know, you had guys like Cole Beasley, who most people thought of before him, Emmanuel Sanders, who most people would, you know, if you're going down the line, of course, Steph Diggs, if you're going down the line of, you know, the Bills' depth chart and wide receivers. Well, Gabe Davis is now clear number two. So the runway has been opened up for him. So, I mean, I got a feeling that you, like the rest of us, we're going to be watching Gabe Davis very closely at St. John Fisher.
Yeah, no, this poor guy, unfortunately, is going to be hamstrung by the expectations that his last game was four touchdowns and 200 yards. Gabe Davis could be a Hall of Famer And we'll probably never again have that game.
Are you saying he's not going to have 50 touchdowns this season? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm going with the under on that, Josh. Where do I get those odds? What sports book has that number for me to bet? No, yeah. And look, there's, like you said, the opportunity is here for him to be really good. But I think fans need to realize that this is a guy before this game, you know, where five catches and 100 yards was a great day for him. So this is brand new to him. And, you know, I think to your point about how big a move that 12 inches is, or, you know, in NFL parlance, up the depth chart one spot, you know, it's going to be a big difference, because previously Gabriel Davis was, remember, he came to training camp his rookie year and it was a fourth round pick. No one had expectations. Wow, look at Gabe Davis. Look at this surprise. Look how much he can do. And then he's learning all parts of the offense. Look at Gabe Davis, a rookie, figuring things out. Well, this year there's expectations. This year there's a need for him to be really good. He can't just, you know, show up and surprise everybody. He's got to kind of live up to what everyone expects him to be. Think about this. If Gabriel Davis has a disappointing year, then the Bills are basically a one receiver team, you know, because the rest of, there's no Cole Beasley or Emmanuel Sanders to be, you know, to take that load off and, you know, to be able to accommodate all those targets that we expect the Bills to have with Josh Allen at the helm. So Gabriel Davis needs to step up. There's a lot of reason to expect he'll be just fine. But this is going to be the first time he's going to have that consistent play time as the number two receiver and to be a guy that's not only, you know, a part of this offense, but depended on to be a big part of this offense. And I'm fascinated to see how fast he gets going with that. You know, as much as he made big plays last year, you know, there were a few times where it looked like late in the year when he was getting more time, when Emmanuel Sanders was hurt, that he and Josh Allen weren't quite on the same page all the time. And, you know, that's to be understood because, like we said, there were other receivers that Allen, you know, had worked with longer, or had a little more experience in the league. So now it's Gabe Davis's role. There's every reason to believe he'll take it and run with it, but he's got to do it. You know, they need him to step up and be that competent second target on this offense.
Yeah, it's an absolute must because, you know, while they brought in a couple of other pieces, you know, Jamison Crowder's a piece, you know, they got a couple of, you know, Isaiah McKenzie, you know, I don't think anybody in their right mind is expecting him to put up 17 games of what he did against New England, right? I don't think anybody's going, right. He's going to be a double-digit catch guy for over 100 yards, you know, on a week-in and week-out basis. So you're right, the pressure is on Gabriel Davis. And for the most part, since day one when he stepped in here, you know, whether it was, you know, Sean McDermott or Brian Daboll or Josh Allen, the praise has been heaped on him as far as in the huddle, what kind of guy he is. You constantly would hear, look, he's so important because he can literally just come in the huddle and you can tell him, okay, this play you're going to line up here. And he'll know exactly what his responsibility is. So it's kind of paying off for him. Another piece to the puzzle that's a new piece is James Cook, the running back. And, you know, here's another guy that, you know, I think Bills fans are highly anticipating, you know, getting a chance to check him out at Fisher. You know, the pass catching ability looks to be off the charts. And everything that you've heard about him, you know, leading up to training camp has been, you know, he may have 50 catches this season out of the backfield. It'll be interesting to see how they incorporate him into the run game as well. He seems to be a mismatch on paper. Now, that's on paper, Thad. We all know that doesn't mean anything once, you know, once the bullets actually start flying and week one rolls around. But he's definitely an interesting piece. Thad, how does Ken Dorsey use him in this offense?
I think not only James Cook, but really the way this offense is going to be pieced together as a whole might be the most fascinating part of not just training camp, but maybe the first half of the season. Because in Cook, you've got this running back that's such a weapon as a receiver. I mean, watching him in college, I might argue that Cook has a top 20 stop and go move. So, you know, stop, turn around, and then go deep. And I'm not saying among running backs. I'm saying in the NFL, period. He's that quick and that good on the edge. And, you know, you see him cook college, high-level, Power 5 conference linebackers on a regular basis. So you've got a running back that's really good as a receiver. You know, you've got a couple receivers, McKenzie you talked about, Tavon Austin, he makes the team, even Khalil Shakir, who can be really good as runners. You know, we talked about Gabriel Davis as a guy who's known, you know, various spots on the offense. He can play in the slot. He can play both outside positions. This offense seems to be built to be able to mix and match these pieces in a myriad of ways, which sounds awesome on paper, but at the end of the day, you got to make it work, you know? And if you're just throwing out different combinations to confuse defenses and not staying with what your strength is, or maybe not discovering what your strength is, then it doesn't function, even if you're confusing defenses. So how Ken Dorsey takes all these pieces that can do all these different things and fits them together and figures out what they do best, how they can succeed, you know, to me is something that I want to, you know, keep an eye on, like I said, into the regular season. And James Cook fits into that equation in a very large way, you know, because of the different things you can hand him the ball out of the backfield. I wouldn't want him to carry the ball more than, you know, 5 or 6 times a game, but you make defenses respect the fact that you've got a speed guy and a quickness guy, you know, in the backfield. If you're going to spread out around him, if you want to put him outside, you can't single up a linebacker on this guy. You likely got to commit a safety or double coverage that zone it up there somehow. So Cook can make defenses think and respect a lot of different things. And, you know, Ken Dorsey, he's got to be super excited about all the different things he can do. But, you know, I wonder how much of that is swirling and how much of that is focused right now. And it's probably a little more on the swirling side just because it's camp. We haven't really started yet in pads.
Yeah. I mean, he's got all the ingredients, right? He's got it all. They're all there for him. It's just a matter of kind of what the recipe looks like, I guess, after all is said and done. Let's stick on the coaching side of things. You know, talking about Ken Dorsey, obviously huge shoes to fill, you know. Brian Daboll, what he did with this offense, he was a big part of that, you know, this offense and how explosive they've been. Ken Dorsey takes over and has never called plays. I mean, there's a lot of question marks surrounding this. But with that being said, one of the things, and you were there, one of the things I found really interesting that Sean McDermott brought up was the idea that they're able to go to OTAs in mini camps and even now training camp way ahead of the curve. Versus if you bring in a new offensive coordinator with an entirely new system, things are going to look a little bit different. They're going to do things that, you know, Ken Dorsey wants to do, right? But they're not starting from scratch per se. You know, you bring a guy from the outside in, there's a little bit of starting from scratch and a get to knowing you period with the most important guy on the team, Josh Allen.
And I think that made a lot of sense when the Bills made that move to keep that continuity, keep your quarterback comfortable, keep the offense kind of flowing in the same direction. So, you know, you might bring in a Jameson Crowder or a James Cook or even a Tavon Austin. But even when you do that, you've got a host of guys around him that know what to expect with the offense that can lay out, okay, here's what we want you to do. Here's what this is going to do. Here's what we are trying to get done in this particular situation. The one thing I'll say about this, Josh, and there's a great piece in The Athletic, I think Tim Graham wrote it in terms of how hard it is to become a play caller for the first time. And Kevin Gilbride talked about the difficulty of understanding how to respond and, you know, go back and forth in the game and, you know, realize you can plan all week for something, but defenses are planning too. And you got to be able to answer. The last first time play caller to win a Super Bowl, Mike Holmgren back in the 80s with the Niners, you know, and if you go year by year, which I did, the majority of the guys who are play callers for Super Bowl champions have 6, 7, 8, 15 years experience. So what the Bills are doing here with a brand new play caller on a team that's, you know, where Super Bowl win is pretty much the this or bust season is very, very unique. There've been a few that have done it in their second year. Some guys have done it in their second year in the NFL, but had prior college play calling experience. It is very rare for a highly successful team like this to go with a first-time play caller. Now, look, you know what makes it easy as a play caller? When most of the time the guys on your team are better than the guys on the other team, is what the situation is going to be in large part for the Bills, especially at quarterback. So it's not like this can't work, but this is a pretty unique way the Bills are going about trying to operate what they hope is going to be a Super Bowl winning offense.
To steal a line from the late former Penn State coach Joe Paterno, it's more about Jimmies and Joes than X's and O's at the end of the day. And let's face it, they've got one of the best Jimmies and Joes in the league with Josh Allen. You know, it's interesting to look at Josh. You know, we're in the kind of, little down period here leading up to training camp where everybody's got a list of the top 10, whatever it is. And Josh Allen always seems to fall in that number 3 slot. And it's always kind of behind Aaron Rodgers, behind Patrick Mahomes, and then Josh Allen. The thing is, I mean, That's not on Josh Allen, because he can't be better, right? Let's face it. There's a good chance we've seen the ceiling, and that's fine. I mean, he was so good last year. I don't know about you, Thad. I would sign up for that for the next 13 or 14 years if I'm the Buffalo Bills, because that's just about Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes needing to retire in order for Josh to become number one. But at the end of the day, I mean, can he do anything more? I guess that's the question. What else can he possibly do?
Well, I'll say this. You know, last year, Josh Allen was fantastic and has earned every single bit of the praise he's gotten. You know, I don't even know if he's number three. In my opinion, it's Patrick Mahomes and then Josh Allen. You know, I think at this point, I'd rather have him over Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, as legendary as both those two guys are, just for the athleticism that Josh Allen brings. But, you know, the passing numbers for Josh Allen last year were not as good as the year before. They were good. They weren't great. You know, his completion percentage was down, his yards per attempt was down. You know, the interception percentage was up a little bit. I mean, still really, really good. But, you know, you talk about room for improvement. I think he can get back to that quarterback he was, you know, in 2020 when he was, you know, not just a good quarterback who's a really great runner. He was great at both ends of the job in 2020. The numbers were all there, you know, so I think there's a little bit of room for improvement, but you're 100% right. I mean, if the Bills get 2021 Josh Allen for the next 12 years, to me, that's 12 really reasonable chances at winning a Super Bowl. And what franchise in the NFL is not ecstatic about that?
You know, I failed to, you brought up Super Bowl or bust. You know, we're a little over a week from, you know, the journey toward that in the regular season. That's it, isn't it? Like, that is the landmark this year. After the way last season ended, you know, let's just assume everyone gets through the year healthy, because let's face it, that's the same with every team in the NFL. That's it, right? I mean, that's got to be, whether that's at the end of the day, you win the Super Bowl, it was a successful season, and if they don't, it probably wasn't.
You know, let me ask you this gut feel off the top.
Sure.
If they go to the Super Bowl, play well, and lose.
Fine.
I think you still feel good about that, because you got to that game. And then now the other one, and I brought this up last year because I kind of thought the expectations were the same last year. And I said, you know, it's Super Bowl or bust. Unless they happen to, you know, I don't know, maybe go to Kansas City and play this amazing game where it's really, really close and they somehow lose in overtime after Josh Allen puts up like 8 touchdowns and they score, which is what happened last year.
Sure, you know? Did.
So if that, let's say that happens again this year, because, well, there are about 85 quarterbacks in the AFC who could, you know, play that game against the Bills, would you still feel okay about it? Because last year, I think we walked away from that game thinking, yeah, it's disappointing, but they lost the coin toss. Other than that, they played the Chiefs straight up. That could easily happen again this year. Off the top of your head, gut reaction, you, Josh, do you think it's a disappointing season if that happens again?
Yeah, if it happens again, it's disappointing. If it happens twice,
that's probably fair.
Yeah, I just think, you know, one time, okay, twice, it's disappointing, because then you really start looking into the weeds of, why does this happen again? Why did this happen again? It's when it happens once, you go, okay, like you mentioned, coin flip is what it is. Happens twice. It can't happen twice. But I am with you. I know I said Super Bowl or it's a failure of a season. You're right. They get to the Super Bowl and they play a good game. You know, and let's face it, the AFC is loaded this season. So getting out of the AFC is a huge accomplishment. You look in this offseason, the quarterbacks that shifted over to the AFC, I mean, it is incredible, the talent at quarterback right now in this conference.
I've been saying it for weeks. The spill season, it's about 3 games in January. You know, you win those 3 playoff games, or you win that one game late in the year to get you a bye and then win your 2 playoff games. That's the whole season. You know, this is, I mean, barring some disaster, they're going to make the playoffs. They're probably going to win the division. They're going to start at home. Win those 3 games. You know, whatever it takes, however you got to find a way, get to the Super Bowl, and that will be the measure of whether this season is successful for the Bills.
All right, good stuff. We are going to take a quick break. Stick around. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. We'll be right back. Welcome back to One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. I'm Josh Reed alongside Thad Brown. Beautiful Friday. We are filling in for Steve Tasker and Chris Brown, who've taken some much-deserved time off before they get things geared up for training camp. Thad, this weekend, it's going to be awesome outside. We are also getting geared up for training camp, the start of training camp a week from Sunday. Got any good plans? The Italian Fest is going on here in Buffalo, so that's going to be the Reed Brood will be hitting up some of the vendors over there at the Italian Fest. You got any good plans to enjoy the weather?
So I live in Webster. It's a suburb of Rochester, a little to the northeast. And every year this week is the Webster Fireman's Carnival.
Nice.
Huge event. Great food. Had some clams last night. That's like the popular delicacy for this. And we're going back again tonight. I think my wife and I are going to have the beer tent for a little while. That'll be fun. And then 18 holes tomorrow. And that to me, that checks my boxes. You know, food, outside, probably an ice cream sundae in there somewhere, and 18 holes. And I'm good. I've done everything I need to do.
Maybe the final round of the Open on Sunday. Kick back and watch that, right? All right, let's shift gears, get back into some Bills talk here as we make our march kind of down the Bills roster and looking at some of the position battles. Slot receiver, Thad, that's an interesting one heading into training camp. Of course, kind of gets forgotten because that's a position that Cole Beasley's locked down for the last 3 years and just kind of went, okay, Cole Beasley, moving on, right? But now there's definitely some moving pieces at that position going into training camp.
Yeah, this is the one position that I'm watching the most. This is my favorite, you know, position battle. If we're going to talk about, you know, a starting spot that's open. And, you know, first of all, as we talked about in the first segment, I'm not sure that Ken Dorsey is even going to use his offense as you would traditionally. There may not be, we're just going to go 3-4 wide and throw it at you all the time. We might, you know, use our running backs as receivers, our receivers as running backs. But with the slot guys, you know, you look at the four main candidates. You start with Jameson Crowder, who the Bills brought over from the Jets. And, you know, people might think of him as, well, he's the older guy. He's not 30 yet. You know, this is a guy that still can make a lot of plays. To me, when the Jets signed Crowder and the Bills signed Cole Beasley 3 years ago, I thought Crowder was the better player. Now, Crowder has had injury issues, is not generally dependable in that way. But on this offense with Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen throwing the ball, I think Jameson Crowder can be a huge weapon for the Bills. The thing about Crowder is that he's pretty much just your slot receiver. He's the Cole Beasley guy. He's the, you know, quick, find open spaces, you know, get underneath, move the chains. That's what he does. The rest of the guys who are in this battle can do lots of different things. Isaiah McKenzie, Bills fans know and love, you know, the multidimensional weapon, still in the mix to be a return man, I think. And, you know, I think he showed with what he did at the end of the year against the Patriots that he might be able to be more of a full-time slot receiver. Khalil Shakir, the rookie, you know, again, this is a guy that people talk about as a poor man's Deebo Samuel. It tells you what kind of skill set he has. He's a great return man as well, too. I mean, watch some of his punt returns at Boise State. This is a guy that even though he doesn't have blazing speed, you know, knows how to find open spaces, knows how to make plays. And then out of nowhere, the Bills throw a flyer. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sign Tavon Austin. Remember him? Mm-hmm. He was the video game master in college. This is the guy that was so good in college that there's a video of Nyheim Hines when he sees Tavon Austin before game, says, guys, that's Tavon Austin. I gotta go talk to him. This is after Nyheim Hines is like a legit, respectable, you know, pass catching running back, and Tavon Austin's just hoping to keep a job. Hines is the one that wants to go talk to Tavon Austin. Well, Austin shows up in Buffalo in May and June, and really, if there is a such thing ever, the star of the minicamp. You know, this is a guy that showed he still has it as a route runner. There's quicks there. There's juice there. And if he can somehow harness even 80% of what he did in college, you know, what kind of third or fourth or fifth weapon does that make for the Bills? So seeing which one of these guys emerges as the number one, or I think more likely what combination of these guys emerges as the guys the Bills want to go to in that slot and for, you know, the different things, the different skill sets they have, you know, as again, another interesting piece of this puzzle that isn't very obvious right now and can go a bunch of different ways. So, you know, when I get to training camp, Kaiir Elam is probably eyeball number one. Number two is all these slot receivers, what they're doing, who's getting playing time, and who is, you know, starting to maybe separate themselves from the rest of these guys as we go along.
Yeah, in talking to Tavon, during minicamp and OTAs. He does not lack confidence, and he believes that injuries have been his issues the last couple of years, and he believes that he's healthy. And I will say this, the upside of being that veteran of that group that you just mentioned, you know, I know Jameson Crowder's also a veteran, but I tell you what, you kind of know how to get through training camp. You know what it takes to earn that spot on the roster. So it's going to be, you're right, that's going to be really interesting. Moving up front now, the guys that kind of make it go, the five offensive linemen, a couple of new faces along the offensive line, including Aaron Kromer. He's back, obviously the Bills' offensive line coach. I don't know that. I get this, just this weird feeling that this, I'm not saying they're going to run the ball 40 times a game, but I have a little feeling that they're going to be a little more run-focused this season. Once again, I'm not saying that Josh Allen's going to throw the ball 15 times, but I do think they're going to make it a point of emphasis. And don't forget, during the season, Sean McDermott said, you learn to run the ball and you establish a run game when? Training camp. And guess what? I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of that at Fisher.
It's funny. When you said, I have a feeling, I knew exactly what your feeling was. I didn't even have to wait for what the next set of words was. I knew it was the thought that this offense, or maybe just the offensive line in particular, is a priority to get better at running the ball. I think Roger Saffold is reason number one for that. This is the guy that comes in with a reputation of being a grinder, being a run lane opener, and a guy who really has kind of struggled as a pass blocker the last couple of years, to where, you know, when the Bills were a pass happy, pass exceptionally first team, you know, you'd wonder how much of a fit a guy like Roger Saffold would have. But if the Bills offense goes the way as you're thinking, and I'm thinking it too, again, we're not talking about more runs than passes, just more runs than last year, or better effectiveness at the run game than last year. You know, I think Roger Saffold and Aaron Kromer are two guys for that job too. And I think even, you know, Ryan Bates, you know, to me is a guy that probably is a little bit better as a run blocker. So, you know, and he's going to get an opportunity, not just an opportunity, but probably the expectation he will be the regular starter at the other guard spot. It really changes how this line has been built. You know, the last few years, it's been a group that is very good at protecting the passer. At least that's what they're much better at. And as a run blocking unit has been, you know, average at best. So I think there's certainly going to be more of an effort. And you go back to that, the press conference after the win game, the loss to the Patriots, the 14-10 game where, you know, the Bills just got, you know, outplayed at the line of scrimmage on the ground, and how frustrated Sean McDermott was after that. You almost knew there was no way he was going to let that happen again. Even if it doesn't mean going a long way towards running the ball more, they just got to be better at it. They've got some pieces to make it happen.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Let's close the door on the Bills for a little bit and take a look around the league. Some interesting storylines over the past week, including one that involves a team within the division, that the Patriot way continues to just unravel before our eyes. The Patriots trade former first-round pick N'Keal Harry to the Bears for a 2024 seventh-round pick. The last time I checked, that's what you call buying high and selling low, Thad.
Look, Bill Belichick is really good at a lot of things. Drafting in general is not one of them. Drafting receivers in particular, exceptionally not one of them. I mean, remember, this is the guy that took Hartley Dykes back in the day. You know, I mean, it was a first-round pick that went nowhere. This is just not something the Patriots and Belichick in particular have been very good at. And Harry is the shining example of, you know, if you get that wrong, what happens next? Look, this is a guy that he's got the physical tools. He's never even come close to realizing it in the NFL. I mean, to be honest, you know, if you're Harry, I'd almost rather be cut. You know, if my choices are get traded for a ham sandwich or get cut, I'd rather have cut on my resume than the ham sandwich trade, which is what happened in this particular case. But from the Patriots' point of view, they feel like they can go with, you know, the group of veterans, Aguilar, Devontae Parker. They basically got like five guys that you had in your fantasy team that never wanted to play. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the receiving group this year. They're going to run the ball heavy. They're going to try and use their tight ends, Henry and Jonnu Smith, a lot, and hope that, you know, they can win games 20-17 with Mac Jones not making a lot of mistakes and, you know, just being competent. Don't have to be spectacular. Just don't screw things up. And in that situation, you know, Harry was the screw things up guy. They probably feel like that the group they have now, they're veterans and know what they're doing. This is not a screw things up group, even if they're also not a score 30 points a week group either.
Yeah, retired head coach, some reports about Sean Payton possibly returning to the sidelines next season. Some of the teams that he's linked to, the Dolphins, the Cowboys, and the Chargers. This is all about which team has the best quarterback, right, Thad? At the end of the day, right? So go ahead and cross the Dolphins off the list. So it's basically, yep. if those are the three teams, it's basically Dak or Justin Herbert, right? I mean, that's basically right.
Justin Herbert,
yeah, right? Yeah. You got to go Chargers job, right? Plus the idea,
thing about the Chargers is with Brandon Staley, you know, in his second year, and they were good last year. They make the playoffs, but they were a good team last year. If they take a step forward, I don't know if the Chargers would want to go away from that. The Cowboys, I can totally see. I mean, you want me to put some money on where Sean Payton's going to be mm-hmm. next year? Give me Dallas plus whatever points I'm getting.
The Bengals. Did you check out their unveiling of the white tiger helmet? Did you see it?
Is that out? I heard some people talking about it. I didn't
see
it yet.
Oh, man. It's like this white Bengal tiger looking thing. It is phenomenal. I mean, look, I know there's a percentage of people who don't like it at all. I am not in that percentage. I absolutely think it's sensational. When you get a chance, you've got to check that one out. It's going to be It's going to be one of the best alternate uniforms we see all season. I know some of the people who don't like it say it looks like the white power ranger, which I disagree. Go ahead.
Josh, did the Bengals actually unveil it, or is it just people? I know it's coming out, but people just put pictures up. That's an easy thing to Photoshop.
It says that they're set to unveil the new white tiger helmet.
Because I saw that the Texans actually unveiled their red helmet, which I love.
You like that one?
I love that helmet. Yeah. Yeah. The battle red. I think that red looks tough.
It's definitely going to be the best part of their season for sure. One last one before Jay kicks us off the air here. The great producer in my ear screaming. Tom Brady on eventual retirement, quote, "I realized I don't have 5 years left," end quote. Does that mean he has six?
I'm done calling Tom Brady done. Because it's just no reason to. When he finally leaves and is gone, when he puts the gold jacket on, that's when I'll believe he's done.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. Welcome back to One Bills Live. I'm Josh Reed sitting in for Steve Tasker and Chris Brown. As we gear up for this year's training camp, we introduce you some of the players vying and fighting for roster spots. Bills reporter Matty Glab caught up with tight end Quinton Morris in the latest episode of Five Questions. Here's Matty.
Matty Glab here with the tight end Quinton Morris. It's time for Five Questions with. All right, Quinton, gotta ask you. I feel like a lot of people on the roster, a lot of Bills fans may not know who you truly are. So who is Quinton Morris?
If you ask the guys on the team, they'll say Q is mostly, everybody will probably talk about my smile first. I just walk around, I'm smiling, yelled at, smiling. But whatever the case, I'm always smiling. So Q's a fun, loving guy. And most of the time when you catch me, I'll be smiling.
Being a part of the tight ends group, what is it like to work with the guys on the roster every single day?
Oh, it's great. It's like, I mean, we got a new vet in the room, OJ, and been working with Sweeney, Reggie, and Dawson for going on a year two now. So it's been great. And we like to call ourselves the tightest of ends. So, I mean, we're real close. We hang out, you know, outside of football. And, I mean, I think the team in general, we just have like a close bond, but definitely in our room.
Word on the street is you're super passionate about the Special Olympics. So could you explain how you got into that and kind of what your involvement is every year?
Yeah, so my brother, special needs. So ever since I was a kid, ever since I was a kid, we've been involved a lot. My family has been involved with Special Olympics, and that's just something we've been doing, like, again, since I was small. And I've, you know, got to work with the kids, and they're, I mean, they're just the best kids. They're so grateful, and they're always smiling, laughing, and, you know, you could joke with them, and they're just so much fun. And so I was talking to Brennan in HR, and I was just like, you know, anything Special Olympics, like, give me a text, shoot me a call. I'm there, and I just, you know, want to be there, and I'm just happy to go out there and, you know, put a smile on their face, because they put a smile on mine. I got to shout out my brother here, right?
Heck
here.
Yeah. What is he competing in?
So he just finished up track. He's a pentathlon athlete, so he does the five events, 400, 100, shot put, long jump, and high jump.
And that is no joke.
Yeah, Texas State Championship. So, first place.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so cool.
Go, Evan.
We're in the off season. You've got some free time to yourself, finally, as we're getting ready for the next season. You guys deserve a break. You deserve the time off. So, what are some of your hobbies in the off season?
Big hobbies. I'm a big gamer. I like, you know, Madden and stuff, and, you know, the Call of Duty, all that. I like the bowl. Like basketball, but, you know, I gotta chill out on the basketball.
We don't need you to get hurt.
Yeah, we don't need any of that. And then I've been trying to work on fishing, but me and my family have not had good luck when it comes to fishing. So working on that, hopefully I can get out there with Gabe and, you know, he'll teach me something.
Gabe, Jay Kumaro. There's a group that fishes out here. All right, goals for you in training camp this upcoming season. What should we expect out of Quinton Morris?
I'm just a guy that's going to go out there and, you know, make plays, you know, for the team, and, you know, just be able to be that piece that, you know, you can plug in anywhere and just trust that he's going to do his job. So it's really what I want to work on, and, you know, so I can be an asset for the team.
All right. Quinton Morris, five questions with the guy who's all smiles.
Good stuff, as always, from Matty Glab right there. We're going to take a quick break. Coming up on One Bills Live, we're going to catch up with Sports Illustrated's Alex Pruitt. He did an incredible article on the Diggs brothers. Stick around. We'll be right back.
And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
Welcome to One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. I'm Josh Reed alongside Thad Brown. Joining us is Alex Pruitt from Sports Illustrated. He did an absolutely phenomenal article on the Diggs brothers. I'm talking, this thing was a lot of fun to read down through. Alex, thanks for taking a little bit of time to join us today. First off, you know, as a reporter, you try to go into stories, you know, prepared, you know, with the information that you need to have, but you try to go in with a little bit of a blank slate. Let the story kind of come to you. What, thinking that that was the case, how different, if at all, did this story turn out compared to maybe how you went into it thinking?
It was pretty, I think, what I expected, which is to say, I guess I got a lot of things that I didn't expect. You know, I covered Stephon during his freshman and sophomore year at the University of Maryland when I was a beat writer in the area. So my relationship with the family with him goes back a while. To the point that, you know, I'd done a feature story on him and Adam Thielen when they were both in Minnesota together a couple of years back. And, you know, I had a lot of stuff about, like, him and his family and his background and his brother and his relationship with him that, you know, wasn't quite the right place at the time to put all that stuff in there. But again, just like knowing them as guys, knowing the family, knowing their mom, and you can definitely kind of see where their outspokenness comes from a little bit in the story too with Stephanie. And, you know, we kind of expected, you know, we go in with this theme. that, you know, we had this issue for of strength and how can we define strength in a multi-layered way? So it's not just big muscles or big stats or whatever, but you know, there's layers to it. And when we unpack that with these brothers, we find themes of, you know, love and tenderness and family and, you know, the power of blood and all that stuff that we get into in the piece. So we kind of knew that that was the framework, I guess. And then we also kind of knew that most likely once you talk to these guys, just, you know, we say it kind of off the jump in the story, you know, just let their rapport take over. Because there is just so much that, you know, I can only say half as well as they probably say it themselves.
Alex, you, like you said, you talked and covered Stephon, his first 2 years in Maryland. What's the difference in terms of Stephon, the man, you know, going from his time back when he's a freshman, sophomore, 18, 19 year old in college to where he is now? And I know you don't cover the Bills on a regular basis or Stephon, but, you know, at least watching from afar, and then maybe, you know, a little more particularly, how has the relationship between he and Trayvon changed going back from, you know, when he was a freshman to where he is now as a, you know, a 28 year old vet in the NFL?
Yeah, it's just a lot more, I guess the mission's a lot more refined, and not just the goals, but the plan of how to get there. I mean, boy, he went through a lot at Maryland, from how much hype trailed his pretty unprecedented commitment as a local five-star there, to the carousel of quarterbacks, five of them that came in his freshman year, to the injuries he suffered later on, to a lot of the noise that was kind of hounding him when he was coming out that I think led to him falling all the way to the fifth round. So, and, you know, I think his relationship with Trayvon is probably along parallel tracks there. You know, that was a time when Stephon's a freshman at Maryland, Trayvon's just a freshman in high school. And, you know, obviously that their 5 year age gap has set this up to be a theme where Stephon goes through something fully before Trayvon can, be that high school, college, you know, your first contract in the NFL, your second contract. So, you know, as Stephon has kind of sharpened his iron, I guess, you know, as a product of Trayvon being there, and I think as important, Stephon being open and willing to share, being willing to let his brother in and say, you know, here, I'm going to give you the whole bag, you know, do with it what you will, but like, I'm going to give you, everything that I have and more every step of the way. I think that's allowed their relationship evolve from, you know, when they lost their dad at such a young age and Stephon had to, you know, in the words of so many family members to him, be the man of the house. And, you know, I think early on, as we get into the piece, he tried to take, kind of that tough love that was, given to them at a young age from their parents, Stephanie and Aaron. But over time, as you know, and Stephanie admits this too, I think one of the most striking things she said was, didn't even make the piece, but she said that Stephon taught the whole family how to love. And it's that kind of tenderness and openness and willingness to like share, you know, the ups and downs of your profession, your life with your brother, someone very close to you. Like that was probably the most powerful thing for me in it. And, I think what the brothers themselves say have kind of defined how their journey has evolved since, you know, as you're saying, when Stephon was just a freshman in college.
Wow. That's really powerful. You know, what the mother said there about teaching the family how to love. And I think in getting to know Stephon the last couple of years, I believe Thad would agree. There's a side to him that I didn't know the Bills were getting when he came over from Minnesota, because there was a different picture that was maybe painted of him, at least publicly. I'm not sure about the locker room, but he has definitely been a treat to deal with when we do get a chance to speak with him. He's been very candid and open and fun loving. So that's great. Thad, we've been at this probably each about, you know, a couple of decades, two decades or so. And I could tell you this, Alex, I've never started a story like this. Thad, I don't know if you have, but it doesn't happen often. The very first line is, Stephon Diggs is cruising behind the wheel of his Robin Egg blue Lamborghini. I have never started a story with that line. I don't know that I ever will. But it's funny because that's kind of the side that the NFL wide receiver, you know, sure, he teaches his family how to love, but man, The Diggs brothers, Lamborghini, that sounds right. Confidence, that sounds right. These two do not lack confidence at all. And in order to play at the high level the way they do, Alex, I mean, what kind of feeling did you get from them? Because in reading your article, the confidence just, it jumps through the pages.
It was fun trying to fact check with Stefan what color his Lamborghini is. That was a fun part of a follow-up call. I think I settled on robin's egg blue because that was the closest, but I don't know if I really know what robin's egg blue is.
It's a Lamborghini is all I know. I was just blown away. What feeling did you get? Hey, first of all, did you ride in the Lamborghini?
I did. It's a very nice car.
I bet it is.
I made a lot of jokes about Exhibit and like Pimp My Ride era of TVs and TVs in the headrests. So if you're sitting in the back seat, you can watch your TV, I guess.
Yeah, that is next level. I don't want to give away all the juice to this article, but there's one story that I thought was really amazing, Alex, and that's the barbecue story from the backyard. And then it kind of carries it over into, I believe it was a wake or a funeral. Can you tell that story? Like I said, I don't want to give too many of the secrets away of the story because people got to check it out on SI.com. But that story is phenomenal.
I thought you were going to say when the kid runs across.
That's also a good one. I had to pick between one of those.
Red light traffic. Yeah, Stefan gives him a couple $100 bills out the window of his Lambo. That was one thing that was really fascinating to me about their story, and I think makes it unique is, there's no shortage of really good brothers out there in sports, in football. But we've never really seen this combination before, of brothers who can go up against each other and hone their craft against each other one-on-one like that. Receiver versus cornerback. And it's a dynamic that's, they flip kind of like in the Pro Bowl. Stefan will cover Trayvon. It's not just them running drills with Stefan, running routes against Trayvon. But this is, again, a dynamic that's gone back through their entire life to, like you said, where family barbecues have gotten shut down essentially because somebody makes the mistake of breaking out of football. And, sometimes it's their mom playing quarterback. Sometimes it's one of their brothers, Marshawn or Aaron Jr. playing quarterback. But the essence of it is the same, which is that nobody really gets anything else done because they're just watching these brothers go up against each other and trash talk each other. And it usually involves like Trayvon getting one on Stefan and then Stefan getting mad enough that he just refuses to stop until they do it, dozens and dozens of times, and the sun sets and their mom has to step in and say enough.
Alex, you talked about how Stefan had to be the man of the house when their father passed away, when Stefan was 14 years old, and how he did a great job with that, how he was the example. He was the one that kind of, pulled Trayvon along to training when the younger brother didn't want to go, how he's been the example for a younger brother and has done, basically has been the older brother about as good as you can be. And then he goes to Minnesota and you kind of alluded to it for a moment, things kind of go south. Stefan talks about it being a dark place. In the story you say, essentially the offense went away from throwing the ball and that was a problem. Are you surprised after all you've known about Stefan and the way he's acted within the family, that lack of targets can be enough to make things kind of go the wrong way for him in Minnesota?
The lack of targets is like most of your job kind of, right? Like, well, if that's how you define, like for me, the equivalent would be like lack of reps, I guess, and like writing stories. And if, outside factors or whatever, like if talking about me, if that got pulled away, I could definitely see how that would affect someone. Lead to the conclusion, as he put in the story, that he just needed to get out of that dark place and he needed to make a change for himself. And, the goal in bringing that up again, kind of as it had to be with the whole story, which is, largely why there's not a lot about Stefan in Buffalo or Trayvon in Dallas specifically, is it all kind of had to tie back to stuff involving them together. So my main takeaway from that was, again, like the lesson of, you know, what I would view as like independent, like worker independence of, you know, I'm going to take this matters in my own hands. And, you know, I feel like this is not a tenable situation for like himself or his mental health and, or his profession. And, you know, I think as he put it, you know, you have to be the CEO of your own life. So, that was kind of what I was reading into that was, you know, what did he want Trayvon to learn and what did Trayvon learn, from, you know, something that is going to happen in life and pro sports, right? Like you're, it's not always going to go the way you want. You're always going to get the reps you want. That was what was most instructive to me was, kind of both how he handled it and then how he distilled it into what he said was the, really the one thing that he told Trayvon about it.
Sports Illustrated's Alex Pruitt joining us here on One Bills Live did a really, really fun, good article on the Diggs brothers. Be sure to check it out. You ever get a feeling that these two, I think they've toyed around with the idea and even kind of thrown it out there. You get an idea that maybe at some point we'll see these two on the same team in the NFL. Is that that's something that maybe they'd want to do?
It's something that by their own admission, they've both talked about a lot in the past. And this is now where the opinions kind of veer off course. Because Stefan, when I asked him, and this was like following up. So I didn't have them together as I was asking this, which I kind of wish I would have. But Stefan said it was something that they used to think about a lot, but now that door is closed after he signed with Buffalo. And he said, because I think in particular, they grew up Cowboys fans. He doesn't think Trayvon is going to go anywhere anytime soon from Dallas. Trayvon's response when I relayed this was, I don't know, anything can happen, right? So I think it's probably in the backs of their minds. You know, we're going to see them face off against each other next year, which is, I think, the next big milestone. Not just because, you know, the NFL football fans have never seen like something like this, but because they've never ever, again, by virtue of their age gap, ever played on the same team or faced off against each other in a game.
Is there any part of them that might feel like, because we've grown up and been so successful kind of being separated, you know, not, they're not separate, not like they don't get along, but they've never been together on the same team, that why try and get together on a team? Because, you know, the boat's been floating nicely and chugging right along. Why rock that boat, you know, by doing something different?
Yeah. Their sister, Portia, another very influential figure, older sister, Portia, other influential figure in their life, along with their mom, Stephanie, especially after their dad passed, she, you know, her worry was that, it would like lapse back into old kind of, that tough love pattern that, you know, she was worried that like Stefan would, you know, almost mother hen, helicopter parent Trayvon, if they were on the same team together and like push them too hard, kind of like what it was like when they were kids. You know, I passed that along to Stefan, and his response was like, no, I don't think so. Like, I think I'm, you know, more mature than that. I think we've kind of evolved past that, which is, you know, that's, I could definitely see that as well. You know, their relationship is past that point where, you know, Trayvon, by virtue of his historic season, I think in large part, has demonstrated to Stefan that, you know, he has his own man, he has his own career, he's doing his own things. And, you know, I'm not sure if Stefan would want that either, just to, yeah, but maybe at the end of the career, it certainly would be something neat to see, something historic.
Yeah, we talk a little bit about them lining up across from each other. What sense did you get on their feelings when you brought that up about who's going to win the majority of those toe-to-toe contests?
Yeah, that's going to be something next year. The consensus among friends and family was like, break out the flags, because they're just not going to stop trash-talking each other and trying to get in each other's heads. But also like, break out the tissues, because it'll be kind of an emotional, tear-jerking moment, especially for people who know them and know their bond. So I'm not quite sure what's going to happen. I like, you all probably can't wait to see. You know, Trayvon's line is he's saving up all of his little brother losses for the Super Bowl. So he's going to cash in if and when the Cowboys and the Bills square off for the big one. He'll take all those beatings that he took in Madden and, you know, playing knee football and pick up basketball and all that. And his mom's, that's one of my favorite parts. Their mom is rooting for him. She's just like openly, like, I want the little brother to win. He's been taking it his whole life. Like, I'll wear, she says she's going to wear her half and half jersey, but, you know, deep down, she wants to see Trayvon get one on him.
After talking with both of them, Alex, and you know, we obviously they're going to play next year, but it might not be next year. It could be this February, you know, in the Super Bowl. It's not out of the realm. How crazy would a Super Bowl week, taking all the stuff we just talked about with what it'd be like them going against each other, but you throw in the 2 weeks, the hype, you know, and everything that goes in, and how bananas would that be, both inside the Diggs family and then maybe outside in the greater world of football?
Yeah, my guess is they would like both close off and be pretty focused and locked in because they know how much it means. But I'm sure in like the family text chain, it would be going crazy as everyone's, you know, gearing up for this moment. Like I said, that has never happened before. Not just like on the macro level, cornerback versus receiver brother, but just for these brothers that they've never actually faced off in a real game that's not the Pro Bowl.
You've mentioned quite often down through the article, and you can kind of see it, the way their relationship has changed, you know, through the years and everything, as it does, you know, when there's a 5-year age gap, you know, that dynamic tends to change over the years, especially as you get older. One of the things that, you know, if you're an older brother, you know, and you have a younger brother or sibling, doesn't matter, you kind of hope they learn from some of your mistakes. And in reading this article, you can clearly tell that Trayvon has watched Stephon for better and worse. And you can tell that he's taken notes over the years of, okay, this is how I deal with this situation if it ever arises. And it is that kind of the sense that you got?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, observing from a very young age, once it kind of clicked that he actually wanted to follow this path, which, you know, he's a teenager, like it doesn't have to click for everybody that age, but you know, by Trayvon's own admission, he wasn't nearly as into like the daily workout grind that Stephon was trying to drag him along for when he was like 11, which again, reasonable. But over time, once it clicks and he sees that Stephon's getting, you know, all these bins of recruiting mail and fans are lining up with like Tupperwares of cookies just to get his autograph after games, you know, the crowds at high schools that he described, like at college games. I think he wanted to follow along. And, a big part of that was, again, this two-way street of like Stephon opening the door and saying, okay, come along. Like, I want you to come take what you will, but Trayvon also being eager to do that. So, you know, I think it really kicked into high gear when Stephon was at Maryland and, you know, he chooses a school that, as he admits in the article, he regrets from a development standpoint, but, it's impossible to separate that from the largest factor that motivated that decision, which was his desire to be close to Trayvon and Marshawn, his brothers. And, you know, Trayvon's up at Maryland every single weekend hanging out and, you know, says that he got to see a lot and he had a lot of people looking out for him. You know, less so when he's at Alabama and Stephon's in the NFL and their schedules clash and it's, you know, much harder to travel and see each other. But, I think that pattern still continues just in their constant communication and talking. And now that they're at the same level, you know, I don't think it's changed. Stephon's still older. He's still ahead of the game in terms of, you know, having changed teams, having gone through a trade request, having gone through a second and third contract, all these things that, you know, are going to continue to crop up for Trayvon.
Alex, you know, last thing for me here, you know, Stephon's always been the older brother, the guy who's kind of been the guide when it comes to their journey. And Trayvon has been, I think, you know, it's seemingly a very good listener because, you know, he's been able to follow along in this path and he's gotten to the NFL. You talk in the article about how Trayvon is more soft-spoken than Stephon. How much of that is maybe his personality and how much of that is kind of being the role of the younger brother, having this guy who can teach you everything and just, you know, being smart enough to keep your mouth shut and listening to him and let him cut in guiding you. And I think, you know, moving forward now that, you know, Trayvon's kind of almost reached the end of this journey, or at least, you know, towards the end, is there more to Trayvon's personality that we might find over the next few years as he kind of, you know, blossoms a little more and becomes more confident as a veteran in the NFL?
Oh yeah. There's plenty of personality there for sure. You know, I just think he's a little more guarded about what he shows the outside world. You know, he gave some answers, I think, when Stephon was there that were Stefan not there, he probably wouldn't have expounded as much as he did. And I think surprised even people who were tagging along and you know the brothers and were watching, like wow, Trayvon's, you know, really opening up here. And I think a large function of that is just kind of having that comfort, that presence of Stefan there. But and you know, you see that, like, look at this video, like, look at them, you know, picking each other up and smiling and laughing. But you know, that's Trayvon independent of Stefan too, for sure. So you know, his humor is it's very sharp, and I think a little more like dry. And you know, as Mike Loxley, a college coach who knows both of them very well, said, you know, Trayvon's kind of the quiet, shy one, and Stefan's like kind of the boisterous, in your face guy you have to tell to keep quiet. But you know, that's, yeah, like, I think, kind of ask where that comes from. Like, it's pretty tough to separate, you know, like, little brother from his identity, because that's, you know, that's just how it's always been. Is he was always tagging along with this guy who was like never afraid to speak his mind. Or you know, Stefan would like custom print jeans and sell them in high school. Like, you know, they've both always been these like free spirits, very always willing to express how they feel, but just, you know, in different ways and different comfort levels in terms of like who they express that to.
All right, one last one for me, Alex, and you mentioned the jeans right there. Stefan is very into fashion. Obviously, it looks like Trayvon also is. Is there a competition about that as well? I would assume there is, on who's the more fashionable brother, and what kind of trash talk did you hear about that?
Yeah, probably, but that struck me more as like an area of common ground and like encouragement for them, that they like, they both have their money now, so they're both like cool with like, yeah, helping each other look as good as possible and feel as good as possible. And you know, they each brought a suitcase of clothes that I think they had helped each other pick out to the photo shoot, and then they had a box of shared jewelry that they took time, and like, yeah, they honest to goodness really seemed to enjoy the process of like yeah, helping each other find out, you know, what to wear for this, help each other pick what to wear for different parts of the photo shoot. And you know, another example I think of Stefan kind of taking the lead, because he's done more of these before. So, you know, little moments where, you know, I think you could see him say like, okay, we're going to do this next, we probably want more of this of a vibe, or whatever it may be. I'm certainly not fashionable enough to keep up with them, but you know, off in the corner with my hoodie and jeans, it was instructive to watch.
Yeah, I think I speak for that as well. I don't think we can keep up with the Diggs brothers either. Hey, enjoy hopefully some more rides in the Lamborghini down the road. This was Sports Illustrated's Alex Pruitt joining us. Be sure to jump on SI.com and check out his article on the Diggs brothers. Once again, Alex, thanks so much for joining us here on One Bills Live.
Thank you. I'm going to go move my Subaru Impreza for street sweeping here in New York.
All right. Hey, have a great weekend. We're going to take a quick break coming up on One Bills Live. We'll continue to look forward to Bills training camp. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. I'm Josh Reed alongside Thad Brown. We're filling in for Steve Tasker and Chris Brown. Let's kick this segment off with a little bit of true false, Thad. True or false, quarterback Kyler Murray will be able to lift the Cardinals during DeAndre Hopkins' absence?
I'm going to lean false. You know, I think Hopkins is a big part of that offense. I've never been a huge Kyler Murray fan. You know, I guess we'll have to define what lift means. Can he keep them afloat? You know, lift them above the waterline? Sure. Can he lift them to something elite? And I'm sure where the Cardinals want to go this year, then I'd say false to that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I just think that, you know, the more we see of Kyler Murray and the more that's on tape, the more I just go, I don't think he's elite, right? I don't think you're putting Kyler Murray in the conversation of the top seven or eight quarterbacks in the NFL. And to me, those are the guys that lift teams when the pieces around them are injured or even down a little bit. I mean, I'm with you. I'm probably a little stronger false than that. I think that they're going to struggle. DeAndre Hopkins' absence really hurts them. All right, next up on the ledger, if you will. Flag football should be an Olympic sport. True or false, Thad?
Hard false here. Look, there's not enough countries in the world that play football well enough to where I care about, you know, France going against Luxembourg in an Olympic sport. Number two, you know, flag football isn't quite football. It's like, should home run derby be an Olympic sport? True or false? If we're not going to play the sport the way it's meant to be played, then let's not bother going through all the rigmarole of putting it into an Olympic sport and training up countries and waiting around for them to somewhat catch up to America to where it might be a contest. You know, if I want to see America dominating something, I'll just have a contest of heart disease, you know, something like that. I'm good with what we have right now in terms of Olympic sports.
I'm a strong true. Let it happen. Really? Why not? Skateboarding is in it, right? I mean, come on. What? Just let them play flag football. I'm with you. Hey, you know, let the U.S. go out and grab another gold medal. That's fine. I'm good with that. And this is a conversation that I've had with different friends, and we may even have talked about this through the years while we've been out, you know, covering the Bills and stuff. Speaking of the Olympics, all right, question for you. If there is one event, I'm not saying you're going to be on the podium at the end of it, right? There's a one event where you say, maybe I wouldn't finish last. Which event would that be? And I'll give you a second to think about that because no offense to people who are curlers, you know, but I have a feeling that if you give me a couple of weeks, I could figure out enough to where, you know, I'm surrounded by guys who know what they're doing. And I could figure it out to not finish last. But that curling to me would be the Olympic sport where I feel like I could maybe not finish dead last. What do you got?
Yeah, that's my answer too. I mean, that's the only one you start thinking about all the Olympic sports. You know, could I possibly pole vault? Do I know how to throw a discus enough to not finish last? Most of those, the answer is no. There's no chance in the world. But I've actually done curling. There's a curling club in Rochester here. If people want to do it, you can go try out. It's super fun. Yeah, it does feel like something that I could train myself up to where I'd at least be functional. Yeah. Maybe Olympic golf potentially.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That would be another good one. But yeah, that's, I always thought that was kind of an interesting debate with friends over, cold soda pops. And one more true or false. The Bengals did the most this offseason to help their quarterback, Joe Burrow. Thad, true or false?
So most in the league or most they could possibly do?
The Bengals did the most this offseason to help their quarterback. Yeah, I believe that means amongst the other teams in the league.
I would say false. In fact, I would put them behind Miami simply by the virtue of bringing Tyreek Hill in. And I think I might put them behind the Jets for all the rookies and Lakin Tomlinson they brought in for Zach Wilson, just off the top of my head. You know, obviously the Bengals did a great job improving the offensive line. I mean, there are a ton of new pieces there. It should be a whole lot better than it was last year. But I believe the receiving group is going to be pretty much what it was last year. And even, you know, at tight end, they're down CJ Uzama, who's not great, but he's a solid tight end. So I don't think they did more close. But I don't think they did more than what either AFC East team did this year for their quarterback.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I do think they helped up front. They helped Joe Burrow up front, which that was a huge issue at times last season. Their offensive line really struggled at times, and he had guys in his face. So I feel like they helped him a little bit with the offensive line. Hey, you know, we started this segment talking about Kyler Murray, talking about Joe Burrow a little bit right there. Well, I want to touch real quick on another one of the quarterbacks in the AFC North. Lamar Jackson, Thad. He is a guy, I don't know that there's another player in the NFL who is more polarizing when it comes to he's elite versus the group of that say he's elite versus the group that say, no, Lamar is barely above average. I feel like that group is really split. It's really interesting because the guy's got an MVP on his shelf, but man, does he gets nitpicked a lot, Thad. What are your thoughts on Lamar?
Two things about that. Number one, when he came out of college, out of Louisville, there was already that split between the group that there's no way he's ever going to be a great quarterback in the NFL to the group where it was absolutely, how can, you know, a guy with this amount of athletic ability and, you know, he can definitely throw the ball, whereas the naysayers said this is not a guy who could, you know, make all the throws in the NFL. So you had that division when it comes to the Lamar Jackson analysis off the bat. I think there are people who have clung to whichever side you're on. And then I think as his career's gone on, what's happened is Lamar Jackson in the regular season is one of the more devastating players we have in the league right now, any position. I mean, the things that he does, the pressures he puts on defenses week to week to week, you know, especially when you're catching defenses that maybe don't have the pieces to hang with better teams in the NFL. I mean, he can utterly take teams apart, especially during the MVP year. But during the playoffs, it hasn't been there. You know, largely his postseason performance has been underwhelming, you know, and whatever passing difficulties he has. Now, look, I think he can throw the ball in the league. I don't think he's a great passer, but I think he's totally fine and above average. But when you get to the playoffs and have to make those throws, when you got to convert third and 11 and the other team has enough speed to prevent you from doing it with your legs, Lamar Jackson hasn't done it yet. And I'm not saying he can't do it, but he hasn't done it yet. And that allows anyone who wants to be a naysayer to say, look at this here. He hasn't been able to succeed here where Pat Mahomes has, where Josh Allen did last year, where Joe Burrow did last year. So it keeps this debate going. I know a lot of the Lamar Jackson talk was spurred by him not making the top 10 quarterback list for whoever had it. And that's wrong. He's a top 10 quarterback. But I do get the idea, or at least understand how there can be reasonable criticism of what he's become as a quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You started off your point, what I thought was really interesting. These two groups came in with this idea. So they're going to find stuff that supports their idea, and they're going to grasp onto it as long as they possibly can, and which would probably mean Lamar winning maybe another MVP, maybe a Super Bowl. One of the things that maybe doesn't get talked about enough is, What's he asked to do within their system? You know, because that system, it doesn't look like what Josh Allen runs. It doesn't look like what Aaron Rodgers runs. You know, the Ravens historically, since John Harbaugh got there, historically have been, we're going to win with defense mostly. That's basically what we're going to do. We're going to build our defense. They're going to try to win games 21-17, and they're very comfortable with that. And they're not going to be afraid to run Lamar on third and 12. Like, they're going to do that. They're going to use the run game. They're going to use the tight ends heavily. Look at their tight ends have always been really good and productive, and they still have a really good one there with Mark Andrews. It's just, I don't, they're not, he's not asked to do the same thing. So you're not comparing apples to apples, right?
I know what you're saying. And this is part of the great conundrum of analyzing football. You know, how much of it is the player? How much of it is the scheme? I mean, is Lamar Jackson not being asked to do a lot as a quarterback because the coaches are just not smart enough to ask him to do more? Or is he not being asked to do a lot as a quarterback because the coaches, by the way, who have won a Super Bowl before, know that that's not what his strength is. And by asking him to go into this other realm as a quarterback, it's not good for the football team. I don't know. I don't have the answer. But, you know, either side can, you know, come up with reasons that would make their argument seem correct. And that's why we keep debating going round and round on Lamar Jackson. I think that the way he ends it is probably by winning a Super Bowl, but more importantly, by winning a Super Bowl, you know, with all the aspects of quarterback play being at a high level from his point of view.
Yeah, as we kind of continue to cruise around the AFC a little bit here, let's talk about the Bills division a little bit. What's the one team, I think most people just automatically are going to say Dolphins. What's the one team that the Bills should be concerned with? Is it just the Dolphins because it is what it is? They added Tyreek Hill. They have a bunch of playmakers on the outside. Or is there a possibility that the Jets are going to be that much better this year? They did great things in the draft. What they did in the draft, I thought, was that they hit a bunch of home runs there. We shall see. And the Patriots, at the end of the day, they still have Belichick. Maybe Mac Jones takes a step. I'm not sold on that happening. But when you look at that division, at the end of the day, are the Dolphins just clear-cut number two?
I don't think it's clear-cut. I think probably they're the better team. I think the Dolphins make the playoffs this year. You know, I think, you know, in part because of schedules and the division they're in and not having to be in either the AFC North or West gauntlet, I think the Dolphins are going to end up a playoff team, and I like a lot of what they've done. And I think Tua is a better quarterback than most people give him credit for. Now, what most people give him credit for right now isn't that high a bar, so I'm not saying much. But I think the Dolphins, top to bottom, you know, have the best roster and the best look at being competitive. So if there is a concern for the Bills, it's Miami. But I think, you know, when you look at the three teams, I don't think any one of them is a worry. Maybe not concern. You know, everybody's a concern, not a worry for the Bills. But I think all three of those teams, including the Jets, could be and might be, you know, might maybe are, you know, good enough to pick Buffalo off on a day where the Bills are sleeping. This isn't last year's division, you know, where I think Buffalo can just roll through the three teams, barring some crazy wind-aided game or something like they lost to with the Patriots. You know, I think this team or this division this year is going to be a whole lot better and a whole lot more competitive, to where, you know, every game is not going to be a walkover for the Bills, probably not even most games.
All right, real quick, we got about 30 seconds. We got to hit the break here, but a bit, little bigger picture, Thad. We probably believe the Dolphins are going to be the team, the clear, you know, the team, the number two team in that division. How about conference wise? Is it just the Chiefs, or, you know, you start looking around, maybe the Chargers make that leap. Let's face it, the Bengals were the team that made it to the Super Bowl last year. When that all kind of comes out in the wash, which team should the Bills kind of be eyeballing?
I've been on the Chargers the last 2 years. I've always been wrong. Like, they continue to disappoint me. I'm going to be on them again this year. I think the Ravens are a team that have to be watched out for. I mean, look, they went 9-8 last year and had one of the worst injury runs you can ever remember. If Lamar figures out in the playoffs, he'll be dangerous. But I'll tell you what, you know who I think it is? Whichever team is healthiest, whichever of those teams with big quarterbacks has the best injury run this year, that's the team that Buffalo's going to have to worry about.
It sounds good, Thad. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Stick around. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. We'll be right back. Welcome back to One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. Thad, training camp coming up a week from Sunday. It's going to be great to be back in Rochester. It's going to be great seeing you, getting back with all the other media members and watching actual football and getting rid of this dead period right now that we're in. I know Rochester's excited to have the Bills back in town. The fans obviously are excited because there aren't any tickets left to go to these training camp practices. Give some, obviously the garbage plates are huge in Rochester. Give some of the people listening and watching an idea of two or three places to hit for a garbage plate.
Well, the number one place is the original Nick Tahoe is downtown on Broad Street. The neighborhood's a little dicey, but let me tell you, well worth the trip. You're going to be fine. You're going to love your food. Outside of that, like every town, Fairport, Webster, Brighton, we all have our own hots. And they all have pretty good plates. I will say the Webster Hots plate, where I live now, is the one of the better ones I've tried. It's a little ways out, but again, worth the trip. The place people got to go if they go to training camp, Pittsford Dairy for ice cream. Unbelievable sundaes, floats. They've got baked goods in there. You got to stop by. If you're going to do one place in Rochester near training camp, Pittsford Dairy is your place.
That's it, Dad. It's a date, man. I'm going to see you a week from Sunday, and we will have ice cream cones in our hands. So stop out there, and we'll see the Bills fans out there. Hey, Brownie and Tasker, they're going to be back next week. Thanks for putting up with me and Thad Brown. Thanks for watching and listening to One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.